With the sun sinking toward the western horizon, Descartes stood beside the tunnel entrance that the monster had created at the edge of the little desert hamlet, his lengthening shadow stretching out behind him across the blood-soaked sand. The tunnel was caving in on itself now, and this evidence would soon disappear as the sands were shifted by the restless desert winds. The youthful ex-mag looked up. Keb, the field medic, was walking from one of the three standing shacks left in the wake of the brigand's attack. His head was held low in disappointment.
What happened?
Keb gestured behind him, not bothering to turn.
Died.
What? All of them?
The woman held on for a while, drooling, not making any sense. She was as strong as anyone I've ever seen, fighting against this thing as it took her over, used her up. She was a hardy farming woman, but there wasn't anything I could do there, not in the end.
Where does that leave us with our man? How is Isha?
Keb looked at him as they stood in the open street amid the wreckage of motorcycles and quad bikes.
He's got perhaps 2 hours, unless we quicken it for him.
Descartes looked away, the phrase echoing through his mind as he watched the wisps of cloud float languidly overhead.
And there's nothing else we can do?
If there is a cure for this thing, I'm not going to find it in the next 2 hours. Not under these conditions.
Descartes nodded, taking in the information and hating every word.
I don't like to see a friend suffer.
Me either.
Descartes brought the sin-eater back into his hand. He approached the door and stood outside the shack that held his loyal incarnate, looking at the pistol in his hand for a long time.
It can run its course if you prefer.
Descartes shook his head.
If it comes for me, attaches itself to my brain, my body, I want you to do the same.
Karnak had led Grant to the shadowy section of the cavern, farther than the hanging light bulbs reached. With his sin-eater in hand, Grant stood beside Karnak, peering into the darkness. Metal highlights were glinting from several vehicles stored in the shadows.
It's a little hangar, just land vehicles. The Sandcat could come in through the entrance there.
Grant could see a winding tunnel that disappeared around a sharp bend.
What's it look like outside?
Camo netting. You'd never see it, but my guys will open it up.
Suddenly, one of the cavern walls crumbled inward, and a mighty, dark claw reached through the opening.
Fire! Fire!
The brigands rushed to take aim at the intruder, Rosalia among them, armed with a little 15-round pistol, a Smith & Wesson Sigma. She had found herself something larger, too, Grant observed, a compact submachine gun based on the old Heckler & Koch MP5K design. The submachine gun was shoved into her waistband, its abbreviated nose creating a square lump along her hip, bulging beneath the silk pants. The hideous monster stood there in the wreckage of the wall. The gauze-like material that had covered the creature before appeared to have been sloughed off, and Grant watched as the hideous thing surveyed the cavern, ignoring the bullets. The green smoke continued to billow from its eyes, and Grant wondered how such a creature could see. Head low, the creature stepped tentatively into the cavern, and then, like a flash of lightning, it was in motion. As it ran on strange, reversed knees, a hand covered in bony protrusions snapped out and grabbed one of the brigands. Grant held his fire, watching the magnificent creature move, seeing those strange ash-like flecks pouring from his body with each motion. Inside the Sandcat, Kane, Bridget, Domi, and their prisoner, Senior Smarts, raced toward Grant's location.
I might understand that we are to go into the belly of the beast. You are crazy, Senior Kane.
Kane glanced back at the tied man sitting in back of the wag.
My partner's in there, and so are your people.
I do not like to do this. I have seen this monstrosity in action once. I have no desire to do so again.
Bridget pulled the Sandcat around as they shot into the tunnel. She took the narrow, rock-walled passageway at high speed, flipping on the bright headlights automatically.
You'd rather let your friends die? Nice!
No, of course not. In my experience, there is always an easier solution than guns. You just need to consider what that solution might be.
Gotta tell you, Mr. Smarts, I don't believe that this creature is going to be dissuaded from its rampage by any amount of smooth talking.
Smarts looked aimlessly around at the interior of the Sandcat, considering everything he saw and everything that he had seen in the past couple of days. As they approached the end of the tunnel, Bridget's foot slammed on the brake. She and Kane jumped out, dashing past the other parked vehicles and into the main area of the hidden cavern. Sitting in the back of the Sandcat, Domi looked at Smarts with her strange red eyes.
If I untie you, do you think you can play nice?
Smarts nodded, but he appeared deep in thought.
What about the Matrons? Your portable Matrons will be able to send the creature away to an island, to under the sea or into space.
Domi looked at him as she untied his bonds, and a wide smile crossed her white lips.
That might be brilliant, you sly old fox.
Ah, you like my idea.
I like it if it works.
Tom Karnak held the recovered Colt Anaconda, pointing it at the behemoth as it tossed one of his men aside. All around, his men were unleashing salvos of ammunition at the great creature as it stalked across the cavern. But it didn't seem to notice them, just occasionally flicking at the bullets that struck it.
What the hell is this thing?
Grant was studying the brutish thing from a distance, walking slowly around the outer edge of the cavern, keeping as much space between himself and the monster as possible as he examined it from different angles, his sin-eater raised, but not firing.
I'm not sure.
Well, it damn well followed you here, didn't it? You brought this here, you must have done something to tick it off.
I don't even think that this has a coherent thought process.
Grant watched as the creature speared one of the brigands with the sharp claw of its foot.
What?
No coherent thought process. I think it just follows instincts, and its primary instinct is to...
What? Kill?
No, it's not killing. It's something more subtle than that. It just looks like it's killing.
Domi ran into the main area of the cavern, seeing the towering creature making its way across the far side. She had the Detonics Combat Master in her hand, but she knew that it wouldn't do her any good. This monster was absorbing and dismissing the impact of far more impressive ordnance than her little pistol. It seemed a pointless exercise to even try. Still, with a gun in her hand, she had a chance at least, and they had come here primarily to save Grant and stop Tom Karnak's insane plan to repopulate America with Barons, not to go toe-to-toe with that monstrosity. She kept her head low as she rushed through a series of cots and sleeping equipment, spotting a couple who, incredibly, had managed to sleep through the whole fracas. Domi stopped beside them, crouching on her haunches.
Hey, wake up, sleepyheads! Gonna get yourselves killed if you're not careful!
What? Who are you?
You have company, and me and my buddies are here to help out!
The man who had appeared to be sleeping beside the blonde suddenly stirred and started to pull a large bore handgun from beneath the covers.
You wanna run that by me again, freak?
Domi saw it coming. One hand knocked the gun from his hand, as the other brought the Detonics to bear on the end of his nose.
Here to help. Genius. Get up, get dressed, and either get in the fight or get out of here.
All right. Don't shoot.
Domi stood and moved on, her gaze sweeping the room as she tried to locate Grant, Kane, and Bridget among the melee. Chasing along a little way behind Domi, Senior Smarts watched the albino woman go about her work. As she exited the open sleeping quarters, Smarts made his way forward, his eyes on the gun that Domi had slapped from the man's hand. Smarts leaned down and picked up the weapon as the couple hurriedly dressed behind him.
I'll need this.
As he followed Domi through the cavern, always keeping his distance, lest she realize he was trailing her, Smarts checked that the gun was loaded. It was a King Cobra, 6 rounds and a short barrel, but it seemed to be in good working order, oiled and well-maintained. A full complement of bullets resided in its chambers, waiting for the order to do their murderous work. This would do the job. Head low, Smarts continued through the cavern, determined to finish the albino freak who had caused him so much pain and suffering. As Grant watched the monster, he considered the implications of his statement. The monster wasn't trying to kill at all.
Senor Smarthouse had an idea, Grant.
On the opposite side of the cavern, running over heaps of boxes and canned food, Kane and Bridget made their way around the back of the monster. As he ran, Kane engaged his contact.
Kane here. What's the idea, Domi?
He said we could use the interphaser to trap the creature, move it to who knows where, somewhere it won't be able to cause any more damage.
Flawed! We'd need a parallax point and someone to activate the interphaser unit. That's something that couldn't be done remotely.
Which would mean someone getting within a hair's breadth of that thing.
Plus, we'd lose the interphaser. Not something I'd want to do if I could avoid it.
As the creature swayed under the impact of simultaneous fire from 3 shotguns, Domi saw Bridget's red hair pop up from behind some crates, just 20 feet from her. From their contact conversation, it seemed that Kane was with her, so all it needed now was to find Grant and they could be on their way. Domi looked around her, trying to locate the X-Mag. As her head turned, she spied the glint of metal off to her left, and something instinctive was tripped in her brain, urging her to drop to the floor.
Die, you bitch!
He had attracted the attention of the creature. Smarts clasped the snub-nosed little colt in his bunched fist. Smarts was panicking, Domi could see, and he didn't have enough bullets in the little gun to do a whole lot of that. As he swung the colt pistol around, trying to find his target, his teeth locked in a savage grimace, Domi kicked herself off the ground and leaped at him, the combat master clutched in her right hand. As his shot went wild, the truck-like woman plowed into him. Agony fired through his leg where he had taken a bullet from her earlier that day. It would have taken less than a second to put a bullet through his skull and finish him, but it would have just been another wasted bullet. Suddenly, something hit the side of his head. Atop the fallen Mexican, Domi pulled the butt of her combat master back once more. He lay there on the sandy ground, his eyes rolling back in his head, unconscious. Domi reached across and plucked the Colt pistol from the man's limp hand before standing up and skirting around the laboratory area as she continued her journey toward her friends. As she ran, she glanced at the Colt King Cobra. With one bullet left, it wasn't even worth hanging on to. Rosalia handled the knockoff Heckler & Koch submachine gun in the same way she handled a sword, spraying the approaching creature with bullets in a graceful swing of movement. The bullets, however, had no effect whatsoever. This was a hopeless battle, and she knew it. Rosalia's ability to dance, to cloud men's minds with their own hormones, as her teacher had explained it, was but one of the talents she had learned from a young age. She was a sword mistress par excellence, an expert in knife combat, both thrown and wielded, and a crack shot, too. On top of that, she was versatile in the use of bow and arrow, bow staff, and lance. And she had even had some training in basic diplomacy before she had graduated from the never-advertised school close to the Mexican border. Tom Karnak had paid the school a small fortune to acquire Rosalia's services and to keep her on retainer as personal bodyguard, assassin, and companion. Rosalia checked behind her as the creature took one step closer across the vast cavern.
Flank me and stay close!
The armed brigands foolishly believed that she would lead a victorious attack, little realizing that all they were now were human shields to protect her from the unstoppable creature's rampage. In the center of the cavern, the creature staggered away from a grenade blast. When the smoke cleared, the monster was still standing, and it tossed its head back almost as if to laugh.
Could there be another way to use the interphaser idea, Bridget?
Such as?
Take, drag, pull, push this creature to a parallax point.
And then what?
Kane saw that Rosalia was leading a charge at the huge creature, flanked by two bandits holding flamethrowers. The flamethrowers spit at the dark-skinned monster, riddling its body with fire, slowing it for a few moments. Then it stepped forward once more, a flaming arm reaching for the nearest of its attackers, pushing him backward by the face. Kane knew what would happen next. The man's eyes would begin to lose their color, and he would start to babble that hideous, nonsensical torrent of words before expiring.
I've got it!
Kane spun, looking at her as they crouched by the crates, close to the high ledge that Grant had originally landed upon when he had entered the cavern almost an hour before.
What is it, Baptiste?
Cerberus! We'll take it with us to Cerberus.
So that it can kill everyone there?
We won't give it a chance to attack anyone. We'll knock it out first.
Baptiste, bullets are having zero effect on that thing. Nothing seems to be able to stop it. How the devil are you planning on knocking it out?
You've forgotten about Domi's attack with the chariot. It ran after she hit it with that. Ran away from us.
So what did you have in mind?
The sand cat. We'll drive that freak to wherever we need it.
And then she showed Kane what she meant, miming by using the TP-9 handgun as a projectile, pushing at her open palm.
You are utterly insane.
What's our plan, Kane? I'm not seeing a lot of other options open to us right now.
Kane saw Grant appear from across the cavern, Sin Eater in hand. One monstrous arm slashed through the air, just sweeping over Grant's head, missing him by a fraction of an inch before it moved onward and into a crate. The creature turned its head slowly, smoldering eyes searching for a target. As Kane watched from across the cavern, Tom Karnak's head popped up from behind another crate. He aimed a long-barreled revolver.
No, Tom, just run! You won't do—
The creature lunged ahead, its mighty arms sweeping forward, grabbing the brigand leader by head and leg, and pulling him from the ground.
Let go of me, you ugly bastard!
The creature lifted him higher. Having caught up with Grant, Kane and Bridget watched as the monster twisted Karnak, bending his body in two directions.
Nobody deserved that. Not even a murderous piece of crap like Tom Karnak.
And now we are in trouble.
Kane watched the monster as it darted toward the center of the cavern, where the thick pipes bubbled.
Damn!
What is it, Grant?
It's heading for the lab!
Kane turned to Grant as the creature continued its journey toward the bubbling pipes and cluttered work tables of the fenced-off laboratory.
Is that stuff in the pipes explosive?
Not sure, but I do know that the interfacer's there.
At his side, Kane looked all around, trying to see an opening in the furious attack on the creature that he might use to reach the laboratory area. Even as he looked, the monster lurched into one of the tall columns of luminous fluid. The creature stood there, blocking the route for either Kane or Grant. Rosalia and a group of the remaining brigands blasted their weapons at the brute, hemming him in.
Damn!
Kane engaged his contact once more.
Domi, are you able to reach the lab area, close to the hostel?
What's on your mind, Kane?
The interfacer's there.
So is the hybrid DNA. Two small metal flasks.
Gotcha!
Suddenly, the petite albino woman was leaping across the cavern through the hail of bullets.
I'll get it!
She was a blur as she sprinted and leaped to the laboratory section like a bouncing ball of white lightning. A moment later, the albino warrior was within the cordoned-off lab, barely 6 feet from the dark skin of the monster's back as she searched the work surfaces for the interfacer and its carrying case. The monster spun and swung its mighty arms. Domi veered to one side, easily dodging the attack. Grant looked across to Kane and Bridget as the three of them reached Domi's area, each aiming their weapons at the monster alongside the brigands.
Domi's too close! She's gonna need a distraction!
Kane's eyes flickered around him until he spotted the fallen brigand with the flamethrower. Kane sprinted across the cavern, aiming a sin eater at the brigand's forehead. Swiftly, Kane pulled the fuel cylinder from the dead brigand's back. Then he hefted the lens of the flamethrower itself in both hands. The flamethrower kicked into life in Kane's hands, and he doused the creature and the work tables around it with fire. The monster turned to Kane, its head held low. The flames danced around it, and for a moment it seemed stunned. Then it swung its huge arms outward as it moved with incredible speed. Across from Kane, Grant and Bridget split up, aiming at the hulking brute.
You found him yet, Domi?
Domi stood in the laboratory in the pools of spilled liquid where the great tubes had been destroyed. The liquid at her feet was beginning to catch fire, a wavering trickle of flames playing across its reflective surface the way that flame will run across the surface of alcohol in a glass. She had found the familiar triangular unit of the interfacer, knocked over but otherwise undamaged, tucked beneath a large glass magnifying plate that had obviously been used to study it prior to the creature's arrival. Domi searched around for the metal carrying case, finding it in a cupboard below the work table. The cupboard door snapped from its hinge. Carefully, Domi replaced the precious device in its padded carrying case.
Got it, Kane!
A metal canister covered in flame suddenly burst open.
I think you just found one of the flasks of soup, Kane!
Domi made her way from the burning laboratory. The monster's fist shot out and found a brigand's head. Rosalia fell to avoid the creature's next attack. Kane played the flames over the creature again, waving the wand up and down, left to right, keeping the steady stream of fire spitting forth until the weapon ran dry. He tossed the dead flamethrower aside.
Grant, I need you to start the Sandcat. It's our best chance.
Acknowledged.
Everyone to the cat. Maybe we can drive the hostel where we need it.
Bridget Baptiste was at his side now.
I thought you said this plan was utterly crazed.
It is. But I trust the planner, Baptiste.
As Bridget lay down covering fire with her TP-9, Kane recalled his Sin Eater instantaneously to his hand. They were close to the far wall now, where Grant had first entered the cavern, and Bridget pointed to the high ledge.
Higher ground!
Read my mind!
Domi leaped over the blood-spattered bodies of dead brigands as she dashed across the cavern, carrying the interfacer in its protective metal case. As she ran, she noticed Smarts lying there, his face drenched in scarlet, a vicious wound across his skull. The man looked dead.
Caught in the crossfire.
Smarts' arm snaked out and his hand clutched Domi's ankle as she was running past. Domi kicked behind her like a mule, an automatic reaction to being caught, but Smarts avoided her swift attack. As their eyes met, the wily Mexican produced a tiny blade from his sleeve and jabbed it at her. Domi kicked the man's wrist. She scrambled ahead, getting out of reach of Smarts' blade. Ahead of her, Domi saw Grant's huge form leap inside the Sandcat. She turned back to Smarts. Domi swung upward with the metal box. She regretted blocking the blade with such a delicate piece of equipment, even as she realized it was her primary defense. When Smarts pulled the blade back, it was bent halfway to the tip. He looked at it a second before tossing the weapon aside.
Then I'll finish you with my hands, you little light-skinned freak!
Domi dropped below his swinging punch. Then she swung with her free hand. But Smarch stood his ground, glaring evilly at her. Head down, Smarch charged at her, determined to knock the petite woman from her feet by weight alone. Like a matador, Domi sidestepped at the last instant, then swept her leg into the running man. Standing over him, Domi eyed the Mexican warily, her lips pulled back in a savage smile. The man moved again, trying to roll himself over despite the wound in his leg. She put the carrying case on the ground and reached for her knife. With the blade in her hand, she pounced on the man's back.
I asked you to play nice.
You are a fool.
You either stay down, or I will put you down once and for all!
The sharp point of his elbow swung back. Domi fell backward, just barely retaining her position atop the man's legs. The huge knife slashed down. Domi pulled the knife from the tender area at the base of Smarts' spine and leaped back suddenly. Her face was now an emotionless mask. She stood there, poised over Smarts as the man tried to turn to look at her. He struggled, but his body wouldn't react to his demands. His legs would no longer move.
My legs! What have you done to my legs?
You got me all wrong right from the get-go. I'm not like Kanan Grant. I'm not a magistrate by trade or blood. I'm from the Outlands.
Domi grabbed the handle of the interfacer's carrying case and jogged away, leaving the wily little Mexican man on the ground, paralyzed. A moment later, Domi was beside the vehicle, scrambling in through the passenger's door.
What kept you?
A little bit of unfinished business.
Swiftly, Domi placed the carrying case to one side of the storage area in the rear of the Sandcat before climbing into the raised seat to operate the machine guns in the armored turret.
All set, Kane.
Domi turned the twin USMG 73 heavy machine guns and began firing a continuous hail of bullets at the coal-skinned creature. Grant kept the monster framed within the rectangle of the windshield the whole time, working the wheels to pull the vehicle around to where Bridget and Kane held their ground while Domi's attack forced the hideous creature back. As Grant pulled close to the raised edge, he slapped the door release.
Get in!
Standing amid the wrecked laboratory in the center of the cavern, the hulking creature struggled against the barrage of bullets that Domi was blasting into its chest from the twin machine guns. Then, head down as if to charge, it strode three swift paces forward on its strange reverse-hinged legs. Standing atop the ledge, Kane turned to Bridget.
You first, Baptiste.
Bridget looked over the side of the ledge, slipping her TP-9 pistol into its holster as she prepared to jump the 10-foot drop to the roof of the Sandcat.
First step's a killer, Kane!
She leaped from the rocky ledge. The creature took another ponderous step toward the ledge. Kane was one of its last remaining attackers now. Most of the brigands had either been killed, wounded, or they had run. Even Rosalia was nowhere to be seen. Bridget was on the Sandcat, just behind where Domi was firing twin ribbons of death at the monstrous brute. She flipped herself off the roof, and she sprinted the last few feet to the open door, then ducked inside. Grant acknowledged her with a curt nod before turning back to watch their hideous attacker through the windshield.
Think this'll work?
Bridget rushed into the body of the armored vehicle and reached for the blocky carrying case of the interfacer. The metal case had taken a few dents, but the unit inside looked to be in fine working order.
The interfacer itself looks fine, but I wouldn't like to second guess whether this plan will actually work.
Grant looked at the monster through the windshield, then at Kane, who now stood beside the open passenger's door.
Get in, Kane!
Kane just waited, holding his sin eater in a steady two-handed grip.
Tell Domi to shut off the attack!
Domi, hold fire!
Are you loopy?
Kane knows what he's doing!
At least I hope he does.
The huge creature's eyes were fixed on Kane. Suddenly, the Sandcat rocked.
Kane's on the roof!
Domi reloaded the twin guns with new strips of ammo that she had found in the storage locker beside the armored bubble.
What the fuck is he doing?
Grant held the emergency brake, locking the low wag in place. On the roof of the Sandcat, Kane aimed at the hulking brute before him.
Come on, come to daddy.
The monster watched him, shrugging and flinching.
Yeah, that's right. I'm an annoying little bug, and you're going to come right over here and squash me, aren't you, big fella?
Suddenly, the jet-black monster tossed its head in the air. Then its head dipped and its smoking green eyes zeroed in on Kane where the X-Mag stood on the roof of the Sandcat.
Well, come on then. I'm right here.
The creature charged forward, arms back, toward the Sandcat and the annoying little human thing that stood atop it. Kane had almost forgotten about its speed, felt sure he had underestimated, as he dived flat on the roof and swung himself into the vehicle by the open door. With Kane inside, Domi took the lead and depressed the twin studs of the heavy machine guns once more.
Floor it!
Kane flipped over and reached for the large door handle with his extended leg, pulling it closed with the toe of his boot. Grant's hand released the emergency brake and the tank-like vehicle hurtled forward and collided with the monster. The massive creature lay across the nose of the WAG now, its legs bent and being driven across the rock floor ahead of it, its arms reaching for the windshield, slapping at the streams of bullets that came from the twin machine guns atop the vehicle.
We got it!
Grant's eyes narrowed in intense concentration as he tried to see past the obstruction of the unwilling passenger on the hood. He turned the wheel in a languid arc, wary that he not shake the monster loose as he pulled into the low-roofed exit tunnel.
Grant, you're too close to the wall!
The right-hand side of the Sandcat scraped along the rough rock walls, a shower of sparks playing up and down its metal flank like witchfire. Grant tugged at the wheel, correcting their course as he powered the Sandcat down the narrow tunnel toward the exit.
I'm blind on my starboard side! Any advice gratefully received, but make sure it's in enough time that I can react, okay?
Pull left! Pull left!
Grant spun the wheel, looking through the clear window to his left to assure himself that he had room to maneuver. As he did so, the monster's huge arms swung toward the windshield.
Bridget, how far to the nearest parallax point?
Less than 2 clicks, bear south!
What the hell way is south?
Grant wrestled with the wheel, trying desperately to see past the huge creature as it secured itself to the Sandcat's hood and began pulling itself toward him.
Right! Go right!
Out of the tunnel, the Sandcat sped over the dunes as the sinking sun painted the whole desert a rich vermilion. Kane brought himself into a sitting position and searched his pockets for a new ammo clip for the Sin Eater.
Did you find any hybrid DNA, Domi?
I couldn't see it, but I'm pretty sure you hit one flask with the flamethrower.
What about the other one?
The whole lab was up in flames, Kane. No way I was standing around there a moment longer.
It's probably incinerated.
Probably isn't enough. I don't like loose ends.
You want to go back?
No. You're right. It has to have been incinerated.
In the raised turret, Domi turned her head back, looking for the hidden entrance to the underground lair behind them. Smoke billowed from it now, marking it clearly on the landscape.
The whole place has gone up in smoke!
Grant pulled at the wheel, struggling to make it turn as the creature's arms pulled around the chassis, and its clawed hand reached down into the spinning wheels that drove the treads.
Getting hard to turn!
Kane leaned across and clasped the wheel from where he sat, pulling it toward him with all his strength. As they struggled together, Grant and Kane saw the creature pull itself up, its head passing over the view window of the windshield, its thick torso dragging past them. Then, all they saw were the creature's legs as it pulled itself to the roof by its mighty arms. Kane looked down the length of the WAG. He saw Domi swinging back and forth in the swivel chair of the raised turret.
It's got the gun!
The armaglass bubble shook, but it held firm. Domi ducked out of her seat and dropped into the main body of the Sandcat.
ETA, Baptiste!
Almost there!
It said better work!
They rushed across the dunes, heading south.
Brake!
Grant slammed his foot against the brake pedal. The Sandcat spun into a skid, and then, as the weight of the hulking passenger shifted above their heads, the Cerberus warriors felt the WAG begin to roll. The monstrous creature flew from the roof as the WAG continued to roll. Bridget lay there, clutching the interphaser close to her body, holding it protectively like a baby as she struggled to keep her grip on consciousness. Something had hit her across the top of the head, probably the roof or sidewall, as the vehicle rolled. She looked around, but her eyes were blurred with tears. She blinked the tears away, shaking her head and feeling the pain there, running along her scalp and clawing down to her eye teeth, making her feel she was about to sneeze.
Kane? Grant? Domi?
Present. Kane, you wanna wake up, buddy?
How long was I out?
Seconds.
Bridget carefully made her way to the front of the rolled WAG.
We need to keep moving. It's outside.
Everyone in one piece?
Kane wedged his feet in a recess and pushed at the door that was now above him.
Let's just finish this.
Kane flipped the door open. He tensed his forearm, bringing the Sin Eater into his palm as he prepared to exit the vehicle. Swiftly, Kane dragged himself up and leaped clear of the toppled WAG. He scoured the area with his eyes, his sin-eater in the ready position. Grant was just behind him. There was a ridge of churned-up sand where they had rolled, a little clump beside a flattened, compacted streak across the fine grains. Bridget and Domi followed, keeping pace as Kane and Grant led the way toward the fallen beast that lay 10 feet from the felled sandcat.
Looks dead.
It isn't. Look at his chest. It's still breathing. Baptiste, do you have your parallax point?
Bridget searched the terrain with her eyes until she saw a circular indentation in the sand, roughly 6 feet across. She rushed over to it and began brushing sand away until she saw the cuneiform markings that surrounded a circular stone base. She had no idea what it was, some kind of Pueblo artifact maybe, but it didn't matter. The interphaser sensor was registering this as a viable parallax point. Leaning over, Bridget swiftly set up the interphaser. Domi stood beside her, checking all around, her Detonics Combat Master in her right hand and her recovered backpack slung over her shoulder.
Where are you planning on sending the big ugly?
Call Cerberus. Tell them we'll need to use the Mattrans chamber. Tell them to fill it with anesthetic gas.
The idea had come to Bridget when she had realized that the Mattrans chamber could be used as a temporary prison.
That's insane!
Bridget glanced up at her for a moment, her emerald eyes burning with determination.
The interphaser would disappear with the creature, and that's too big a risk and too high a cost. It's breathing, which means it needs air, the same as the rest of us. Now call Cerberus and tell them we're coming home. Tell them we'll need to be pulled out of the jump chamber as soon as we arrive. Tell them no one is to touch the creature.
Domi acknowledged Bridget's instructions and engaged her contact. Kane and Grant circled warily around the monstrous creature as it began to shake itself back to full awareness. It then started to raise its torso off the ground.
Baptiste, you have that jump point ready?
Bridget glanced over at the monster.
It's ready when we are.
Stirring to wakefulness, the creature moved slowly as it struggled to its feet, assuming its full majestic height once more.
We're bringing it over. Engage the interphaser in 10 seconds.
10 seconds? Are you nuts? How?
Come on, ugly. Time to play ball.
The coal-skinned creature tossed its head, its green eyes billowing smoke. And then, with no warning, it leaped, 8 feet of taut muscle hurtling toward Kane and Grant as they turned and ran.
Well, you sure got its attention.
Ahead of them, the blossoming flower of the interphaser had emerged from the little metal pyramid, tip and base, a swirling cone of colors and lightning streaks. Kane looked over his shoulder, keeping his sin-eater on the creature.
It's all in the subtle planning.
They leaped into the blossoming flower of the interphaser beam, with Bridget and Domi accompanying them. The monster followed, reaching into the cone of color as its prey disappeared from sight. The familiar armaglass walls of the Cerberus Mattrans chamber appeared before Kane's eyes, and for a moment, he could see the silhouettes of figures moving about beyond, within the confines of the control room. He looked around as he recovered from the jump. Beside him, Domi was slumped against the armaglass wall. Grant was beside her, his sin-eater in hand, but he looked dazed. His eyes were slightly crossed. Bridget Baptiste lay beside the interphaser, the little pyramid having traveled through the quantum slipway with them. Against the far wall lay the monster, looking as if he had charged through space and slammed into the armaglass confines of the chamber. Kane tried to raise his own sin-eater to keep the creature covered, but his arm felt heavy. As the mist and sparks of the jump process dissipated around him, he became aware of another kind of mist in the chamber. Kane felt the room spinning, and then he felt nothing. Before his squad left the little settlement, Descartes finished up the final report to Lakesh at Cerberus Redoubt.
In conclusion, Lakesh, everyone who is infected dies.
Several of Descartes' incarnates were busy burying their dead comrades. Three in all, including the man who had been infected by the strange virus, a single bullet wound now visible dead center between his eyes. They had found Amun's body in an even worse state than Farouk's, where the bikers had torn him to pieces. This would go down as a black day for the brave incarnates of the city kingdom of Aten.
Thank you, Descartes. Do you have any further idea of what it is?
Theories, but nothing we could prove. The whole thing is over in a few hours. He just moves too quickly to study.
Thank you for the report.
You're welcome, Lakesh.
Deckard watched the sun as it finally disappeared below the western horizon. The pungent scent of burning chemicals came to Rosalia as she struggled to escape the heavy, dreamless sleep. She was lying on the hard ground, sharp rocks pressing against her. Immediately alert, she pushed herself up from the ground, struggling to free her leg where a heavy weight rested over it. She looked down at her leg and saw Wills, one of the gang members, lying there, mouth and eyes wide open, blood streaking across his face. He was dead. Ahead of her, she could see the flames, tinted blue and green with the chemicals that burned within them, where the laboratory was being reduced to ash. Thick, dark smoke poured from the lab area, funneling up into the air, and already the highest of the stalactites were lost in the black fog. The ground was littered with the dead and covered in blood. Looking across the cavern, Rosalia spotted two brigands making their way into the exit tunnel, holding kerchiefs over their mouths and nostrils so as not to breathe in the awful fumes of the burning laboratory. She struggled up, wary of further attacks. Something had happened, but she hadn't seen what. The monster was gone, that was for certain. She paced through the bodies, considering the true value of helping any of these people. There wasn't time. The smoke from the lab was polluting the air in the cavern, and soon no one would be able to breathe. She stopped for a moment close to the lab and peered across at it as the thick black smoke rushed upward from its center. The interphaser was gone, but there, on one of the work surfaces, she could make out one of Karnak's precious flasks, the gunmetal tubes that contained the genetic material he had had his men working on night and day. She leaned over, weaving her hands between the chartreuse-tinted flames, struggling to grasp it. She pulled her hand back with a sudden jerk. It was no use. The flask was far too heavy and impossible to reach.
Time to go.
She ran toward the tunnel. Above all else, Rosalia would always be a survivor.
Kane. Come on, Kane. Wake up. Join the rest of us.
His eyes flickered open, and for a moment he was dazzled by the bright lights of the Cerberus Medical Bay. He turned his head, feeling sore and drained and empty inside, and saw Reba DeFore standing over him, her ash-blonde hair tied back in an elaborate braid over her shoulder, her stocky body sheathed in a white jumpsuit.
Reba, what happened?
You took a lung full of anesthetic gas. Domi instructed us to fill the Mattrans chamber with it before you made your jump. Enough to knock out an angry elephant were apparently her exact words.
No, I said horny elephant.
Domi looked awake, fresh-faced, and full of life, despite the trauma that they had suffered on returning to the Cerberus installation. Kane became aware then of the other people in the room, two more beds where Grant's and Baptiste's familiar forms lay. A sudden feeling overwhelmed Kane for a moment as he stared at Bridget, but it wouldn't hold. He lost it almost before he had time to even acknowledge it. Grant sat up on the bed.
Whoa. I can't remember shit and my head is pounding.
You all imbibed quite a heavy dose of anesthetic gas, so you may feel some after effects for a while. Wooziness.
I'm sharp as a tack.
Nausea.
I'm kinda hungry.
And a general inability to concentrate.
Ooh, what's this for?
Put that down. The effects will wear off in a few hours. If you need anything at all, I'll be right here.
Thanks, Reba.
Grant pointed to the door.
Canteen, who's with me?
I'm in!
Kane looked across to the bed beside Grant's and realized then that Bridget hadn't said anything. The red-headed woman just lay there, her eyes closed, a blissful smile on her lips.
Reba, is she okay? She's not waking up.
You all took different doses and you all have different constitutions. Domi, for instance, was awake for 5 minutes before you joined us.
Yeah. I've been sitting here the whole time watching you drool, Sleeping Beauty.
Nice.
Bridget's fine. Just needs to sleep it off a little longer. I'll let you know if there's any change.
Thanks, Reba. I'll come back later.
Kane joined Grant and Domi as they made their way to the canteen, leaving Bridget Baptiste under DeFore's watchful eye. After Kane and his field team had been pulled out of the Mattrans area, Lakesh oversaw the removal of the monster that they had brought with them. The adjacent operations room had been evacuated of all but the most necessary personnel, and those who remained wore hazmat suits and gas mask rebreathers. As one team continued to douse the area with anesthetic gas from huge hoses, the remainder had carefully wrapped the creature in a tarpaulin, heeding Domi's instructions that no one touch it. The whole operation, with the smoking lances of anesthetic gas and the wide-brimmed masks of the hazmat suits, reminded Lakesh of old-fashioned beekeepers with their smoke guns, suited up and collecting honey from the hive. Once the sleeping creature had been wrapped up, its limp body was rolled onto a wheeled flatbed that was normally used to move crates around in the storage area of the redoubt. Under Donald Bry's instruction, a path had been cleared of all personnel, and the flatbed carrying the monstrous body was slowly wheeled out of the control room. The masked men with the anesthetic hoses kept pace as they proceeded down the wide main corridor that was carved directly into the rock of the mountain. Wearing his gas mask, Lakesh hung back, watching warily, wishing he knew what it was they were handling. Descartes' reports had not boded well, and he feared that the monster might reawaken at any moment. If he understood correctly, its very touch burned into an individual, mind and body, eating the victim up from within. Lakesh shivered at the thought, crossing his arms over his chest. As soon as he had received Domi's instructions, he had planned the next stage. If anesthetic gas might be used to hold the creature, then a continuous supply piped into a room could be used to quell it until they could find a more permanent way to deal with it. Reports from the field team had been sketchy, but as he understood it, the creature was apparently impervious to bullets and other attacks. Something immensely powerful was driving it, an internal engine that stopped at nothing to reach its goal. The real question, then, was just what that goal was. Creature and flatbed were loaded onto an elevator, and a small squad squeezed inside, anesthetic lances piping more mist into the air. Lakesh stood in the corridor with Donald Bry, watching the indicator lights of the elevator as it dropped to a lower level. The team down there already had clear instructions of what to do, and they were all prepared with their own lances of smoky anesthetic gas. Under heavy sedation, the monster had been wheeled into a mid-sized storage room where its limbs were chained by staffers with gas masks. Six portable air recyclers had been brought to the room, and they had been converted to feed anesthetic gas from large freestanding cylinders. Lakesh and Bry came down to observe the final part of the pivotal operation. Once the door was secure, they removed their masks.
I just hope it's enough.
The black-skinned creature was left alone in the emptied storage room, feeds of anesthetic pumping through the air in vaporous clouds, sequenced so that at least four units would be pumping at any one time. The door was locked, leaving only a small window of glass within the door itself through which to observe the behemoth. Lakesh had considered using a windowed observation room, but the glass would always pose a weak point, no matter how strong it was, compared to the solid concrete walls of the storage room.
What happens next?
Perhaps Cain or Brigid will enlighten us.
Cain returned to find Reba DeFore sitting at her desk, working at a series of charts beneath her desk lamp.
Hi, Reba. Any word on Baptiste?
There's nothing to worry about, Cain. She was hit with a strong dose of that knockout gas, but she'll sleep it off. Her breathing's normal. No use hurrying her.
You mind if I wait?
The ash-blonde-haired physician gestured toward one of the chairs in the room.
Be my guest. You can tell me all about what happened out in California.
Bridget's head felt muzzy, and her senses came back to her very slowly, one by one, as though being overwhelmed with heady incense. Her eyes opened, and she tried to focus on the expanse of white before her. With an effort of will, she brought the white into sharp focus, dappled white squares a few feet before her. They were called tiles, ceiling tiles. It was strange, as if she had forgotten what ceiling tiles were for just a moment. She blinked, holding her eyes scrunched closed. Then she opened her eyes again and looked around her. She was lying on something horizontal and cushioned. Her head turned to her right, and she saw a transparent cylinder there, the tiny bubbles clinging to its side. And past that, she saw the off-white walls and a tower of black blocks on a pedestal in one corner. She knew where she was then, the Cerberus Medical Bay, lying in bed, alone in the recovery room. Slowly, warily, Bridget raised herself until she was sitting on the bed. She wiggled her toes, feeling the sensation slowly return, the little tiny fireworks of pins and needles as they came back to life. With one hand resting on the bed beneath her, Bridget pulled herself around until her feet swung over the edge. Her long hair flopped over her face, tickling at her nose, as she tried to steady herself, feeling like a passenger aboard a ship in a storm, her insides roiling. She sat there for a moment, head bowed, red-gold hair over her eyes like a curtain.
Ooh.
Something had really affected her there, making her head feel so clouded, but it was going now, dissipating. Carefully, Bridget stretched her right foot down until it touched the cold tiles of the flooring. She felt the cold seep into her, feeling the goosebumps rising up her ankle, along her leg. She pulled her other leg from the bed and forced herself to stand, swaying a little as she stood in place, arms outstretched for balance, to protect her should she fall. She looked around once more, gazing at the long white oblong before her, the bed, the square block beside it, the cabinet, the tower of shiny black things, the crash cart. It was as if her memory was slowed down, or rather something even more fundamental than that, something more akin to understanding. Seeing the glass of water atop the cabinet once more, Bridget reached forward and picked it up with a shaking hand, bringing it to her lips. Suddenly the glass slipped from her hand.
Baptiste? Baptiste, are you okay?
Bridget turned to face him, saw the large figure there, another behind him, this one with long, somewhat blonde fur atop its head, weaved into tresses, a female. She knew they were people, not apes. She knew who they were, but for a moment, the names wouldn't come. The male stepped forward, his hands grasping her by the shoulders, pulling her toward him, into him, holding her steady.
Careful now, careful. Broken glass and bare feet, not a good mix.
Her lethologica passed in a flash, and like a spiritual revelation, she remembered who he was.
Cain.
Yeah, it's okay now, Baptiste. You're okay.
My head feels all messed up.
The female with the ash blonde tresses, Reba, bent to clear away the shattered glass.
You took a big dose of tranquilizer gas. You've been asleep for almost 4 hours.
Bridget looked at the physician as she wrapped the glass carefully in a paper hand towel.
Thank you, Reba.
Cain helped Bridget from the recovery room, letting her rest her weight against him. They entered into the little office where DeFore had been working at her charts. He sat her down in one of the empty chairs that ran along the side wall and crouched before her, his blue-gray eyes looking into hers.
Are you okay, Baptiste?
Bridget began to nod, then stopped as she felt the heaviness still in her head, that awful roiling feeling once more.
I think so. I feel kind of hungover.
Well, it was a heck of a party. Got a bit rowdy there at the end.
Oh, tell me all about it.
She reached forward and placed a hand on his face for reassurance, feeling the warmth of his cheek.